help us to make this session functional today. We got to try to raise some issue that is maybe not that it is popular, but it's not that heavily represented throughout the forum and the process, and it is capacity building and training. It appears that we are very much concerned about some relevant issues, definitely, which is security and critical resources and so on and so forth. But somehow it appears that we are not really paying too much attention to training, to capacity building, to bringing new leaders into the process to try to make it even more efficient. Now, I'm happy to be a part of the group, which is Diplo Foundation, which is dealing with trainings in different fields, but one of these being internet governance. And I'm also happy to have these wonderful ladies all around me, not because only they are so cute, but also because they really know what they are going to tell you today, and I'm sure that you can help us to make this discussion worth. In very brief, I wanted to share with you what is Diplo Foundation, because probably you've been seeing different people with these strange badges over here, and you might think that it's some kind of a sect running all around. Well, there are quite many of us, even though not everyone is working for Diplo. We have a lot of associates around the world, as you will see later on which part of the world we are covering. Basically, what is Diplo Foundation and what is its mission? It started as an organization which was to support diplomatic actions of developing countries. And most of our focus is on developing countries and training programs, even though we do have associates from developed countries as well. And then we moved to capacity building program or to some kind of a training because we have long experience in trainings. We tried to make some kind of a learning program or training, capacity building training program for, let's say, emerging leaders, new people that would like to get involved. Now, what is our experience? What was some years ago? It was, as with any other program, that we wanted to make online. And I'm sure that some of you have also experienced online programs. It was like, firstly, you meet people, you have some weekly session or something like that, then you go online, then you interact online with people, and then afterwards you probably again meet, maybe try to implement something of what you have learned and so on. Now what we try to do is to remove the first phase. So we completely started without anyone meeting prior to face-to-face, prior to the training. And it was quite an experiment, fully online training with people from all around the world, different zones, time zones as well. So it was quite complex, as you will hear afterwards. And guess what? It worked out. It worked out. So we introduced training through the platform, which allows full interaction of participants, and they are guided by their tutors to try to go through the materials and through the topic. This is something that can show the process of building knowledge within the, well, okay, internet governance here, but any other. You have so many small workers that are working and building a huge construction. I particularly like this illustration. Now, the aims that we wanted to achieve with such a program were quite simple. We wanted to make a quick program that can really do a training, efficient training that is effective and that is low cost, which means that we don't spend too much money on traveling around for people to learn. Maybe to make them involved with the process, but that's the last stage. Who are the participants of the program and what is it about? This is also our recommendation or our positive experience in making programs of this kind, involving different stakeholders, people with different backgrounds, as much mixed as possible, because they effectively learn from each other. They don't learn that much from professors, from experts. This is a valuable component, but knowledge sharing is something that's very important. So we had like officials from governmental ministries, we had students, we have many representatives of civil society, journalists, also international organizations, and they exchange a lot of their own experience previous to the program. Methodology, so I'm just jumping very quickly through this. we introduced three phases. The first one is the online course, which means people are gathering, they have materials, they have discussions, and you will see that later. The second one is research project. So if every one of them goes through some basic course, exchange some knowledge, meet people, then they try to implement, to work on a policy drafting. Not only policy, it can be analysis, it can be different articles, different type of research project. Yeah, you can jump in at any moment, moment if I forget anything. So different types of research, but also done online, collaboratively. And it appears that it was very efficient way of working the research as well. And finally, the fellowships, it's something that we figured out it's really, really necessary to introduce. Most of the programs end up, like you have the course, that's it, goodbye, everyone is crying, and that's it. But what we tried to do is to introduce another component, which is immersion of that, like trying to introduce these leaders into the process. Once they acquainted some knowledge, once they exchange the knowledge, they have some experience throughout the process. So now we have, for instance, at least 10 of our associates from different parts of the world which completed the program and are delegates or associates with Diplo Foundation at IGF in Rio. And some of them you see here, and some of them you see over there, and some of them you're going to see during these days with these funny Diplo badges. This is something that is very important that we will probably ask you to maybe help us with finding interesting positions for different people to try to extend the number of people and variety of people that are showing up in these IGF meetings. Online course, very briefly, is going through basic, we call it baskets, basic topics that we extended it with many more emerging topics like net neutrality, commerce, critical resources, and many other. E-voting, Ginger is particularly happy to lead the e-voting course, which just started. Research is on most of these topics, they're focusing on some specific interests of participants, done through a wiki tool. So all of you know what a wiki is, and we try to introduce a new tool for collaborative learning, and it appears to be very functional also for the research. People are working together in groups and simply adding parts of the story, parts of the research. And you can see various topics that we covered thus far. You can, at the end, you'll see the website, and I invite you to visit it. And I think that was all about me, except for mentioning types of the fellowships that we had. And it is like, apart from fellowships positions, bringing people to the IGF meeting, to GKP meeting, which is going to take place in Kuala Lumpur in December. Then we had fellows that were working with the secretariat of the IGF, with Mr. Marcus Kummer, and they were assisting the secretariat as well, and it was a benefit for both sides. We also awarded some people with fellowships online research. We are searching also for some other fellowships for conferences, for working with other organizations, which can be beneficial both for the organization and for the people. And the last is the structure that we, in a way, experienced. This drawing is maybe not too much descriptive. Maybe it is. But you have a platform through which all the people are gathering and exchanging knowledge. And then you have tutors, which are their fellow colleagues, experienced, usually ex-participants of the course as well, which are, in fact, facilitating the discussion. So they're not lecturing. They're facilitating the discussion and trying to provoke people to exchange knowledge. Then you have advisory board, which is very important also, like several experienced and experts in some fields which are helping the process. That will be very brief about the concept that we introduced. Now, what we are going to try to do now is to try to switch from one to another topic that we want to discuss, and we encourage you to at any time just jump in with any question or any comment, and we'll try to provoke you to do that as well, because the point of the session is not that we present what we did, but for all of us to discuss what are the good sides of the training programs, whether something can be implemented on local level, what is the value of the local content, of the local language, There are very different things that we want to address here. And I think Carolina can now switch on to her view of the importance of the online learning.
Você pode trocar para a apresentação que está no seu computador, por favor? Carolina é o nome. Obrigada. Good morning, everybody. I'm gonna try to do my presentation in English, even being a Brazilian, but it's another kind of experience that people that are taking online courses are facing, because as you may know, like, the internet is full of English content. But I choose, when I did the Diplo Foundation course, to be part of the bilingual group. So it is a group that the materials are in English, but the discussion, they can be either in English or in Spanish. So for us that are from Latin America, we feel much more comfortable sometimes dealing with Spanish or Portuguese or than English. And I think this is a very important characteristic that Diplo offer to their students, this possible of multilingualism in these courses. I've been working in law schools from some time, because, like, I always had this dream to become a professor here in Brazil, and I was already start teaching. But I think that as a professor, you always need to study. So last year I was, and this year I was a student in the Diplo Foundation course, and this really brought me a lot of opportunities has been here in the Rio de Janeiro with you since, yeah. So the first thing I wanted to talk to you is which kind of people we need to build a democratic and transparent internet governance. And I think these capacity building programs, they have a really crucial role to build the people we need acting in the internet and acting to drive the policymakers to fulfill the needs of the population and of the civil society. So the first thing the picture always showed, I always try to show through pictures what I want to say. So we have to think, is this working? So we have to think that behind this process of agglomeration and making sense of this physical infrastructure, the crucial resources that we were discussing yesterday, we have people. So, and what are the importance of these people? What are the role of these people? So we know, everybody here, we know that the ICTs, they are crucial, and they have changed the way of our lives since the 90s. And they are helping us to bridge the digital divide. So, but if we think about digital divide, this is a map from 2000 about the digital divide in the world. So technically, theoretically, you have all the green countries with internet access. And then you say, oh my God, all these countries have internet access. So the digital divide is not a quite problem. But if you take a look deeply in each country, I'm from Brazil, so I'm giving a Brazilian perspective. All the red part here is people in Brazil without internet access. And all the yellow, it's people with access. And you can see that people that have access are in the mainstream cities like São Paulo, Rio de Janeiro, the big cosmopolitan areas. So this brings a problem that this map here is not quite true if you go deeply in each country. So what this means in terms of when we think to develop a capacity building program to address this kind of disparity, this kind of difference. How should we address the digital divide, and not just the access problem, but the information divide that is being replicated in the internet? So I really think that capacity building courses based on the transposition of characteristics of the Socratic method to the internet through online programs. So what are the Socratic method? The Socratic method is a method that I've been implementing in law schools and other schools, MBAs and all that, that you work through cases. And you work from a down-top approach, not top-down. So are the students that are creating and developing and discussing the content. And as you're gonna see in the map, it's incredible how diversity are the students in Diplo Foundation. So I was working with an engineering professor, an anthropologist, a journalist, and I was the lawyer in the group. So imagine how much information I can get from them to make it stronger, my knowledge, and to know how to address better when, for example, we are developing laws or we are proposing civil actions or all the other stuff. So I think this diversity is one of the great points of that online course can introduce. And this, I really like to show this slide because this slide is about a communication process. It's about how people learn and how people learn to innovate and to collaborate and to participate. So you have all the base here of this pyramid, it's that are the key elements to build an environment that allowed people to learn and allowed people to innovate. So you have facilitators, you have collaboration, you have an environment that help you to learn and help you to put your own characteristics on that. We can call that, you know the word appropriate technology, so we could call it appropriate environment. You have the interconnection, you have the knowledge networks, the collaboration between people that are working together. So people by them are learning how to learn. We are learning how to learn again when we are doing a distance course. And then this process keep going. You are practicing, you are building concepts, you experiment, you are reflecting, and this is continuous and cumulative. And this is how I believe people learn. And learning by then, you enter in a good cycle of acting, acting, producing and sharing knowledge and learning and innovating and being able of sharing values, ideas, cultures, and being a full participant and being a full actor in this internet governance process. And different from traditional courses, I think like the proposal of Diplo Foundation is really bring together what we can call of open content, because the online course is open for people from developing country, and they are down top and all that. They are different a little bit than the traditional value chain of content production. And I think this is very innovative. So coming to this pyramid again, I want to show how Diplo fulfill almost all these elements and why I was really happy with the course. So if you take the base of the pyramid, there are tutors that are trying to extract from the students all their knowledge. So they are not teachers. At the end, we become colleagues, we become friends, because we are really working together to build this knowledge. They are really provoking us to discuss. And Ginger, she was my tutor, and she's going to show you how you can interact with the site and the chat and all the instruments we have. You have the environment that is in the internet and the chats and all the ICTs and everything that allow that. You have the collaboration between the people and you are building knowledge. Nowadays I'm working with different projects from with people that I know through the course, with privacy experts and all the people. So it's, you really are interfering in the process. So you build concepts. One of the meetings was about, is internet a public good? What is a public good? So you are always building together concepts that reflect what are the needs of that people that are involved in the course. You are practicing. Every week you have to give five, 6 hours per week to do your weekly activities. And if you work like 12, 14 hours a day. This seems a lot, but it's so comfortable to work with this platform, with this instrument, that is really okay. Now I'm going to relax from work and do some work in Diplo. And another thing that I like, it has everything is in the internet. There is record of everything, so you always can go back and read and put more comments, and you get alerts from everything that is put in the platform. So it's really, you really can get track of that. And this, I think, it's really important, because this every concept that we are building here, they are dynamic concepts. And they are cumulative because of that. So you are really learning. So it's just like a brief presentation, and then we're going to discuss later. So I think e-learning courses that are based on collaboration, based on sharing. I am a H2K advocacy. I'm a Creative Commons advocacy. So I really believe on collaboration to build concepts and capacity building. So I think Diplo and other open educational resources are really going through this pathway that I really think it's important to bring the civil society to this kind of discussion. Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Ginger Pak. I'm from Venezuela. I've been associated with Diplo now for several years, and I can tell you I have never been in the Diplo Geneva offices or Malta offices or Belgrade offices. I work only from Venezuela. So people see my card and they say, oh, Geneva. And I can say, I've never been to the Diplo offices. This is one of the big advantages of our online courses. I'm now going, as Carolina gave a very, you may not believe this, this was the student participant presentation, very professional. So I had the pleasure of being Carolina's tutor this year in the bilingual English-Spanish group. And as you can see, we do use the resources of each student. Last year, I gave the student perspective at the IDF, and this year I'm giving the tutor perspective. And it's been a very good progression for me, but it does show very vividly what Carolina says. We do have a continuation, we do build on and multiply on everything we learn. I see my role as tutor, as facilitator, as moderator, not teacher. I ask more questions than I answer, and I may encourage the students to ask each other questions. I may respond to an annotation with a question rather than I would never give an evaluation or a correction, although I might ask a participant to review or substantiate their position if I think it's necessary. The idea is to help them take advantage of their strong points while we fill in all of our weak areas. The lawyers will learn technical points from our techie nerds, and the techie nerds will learn about human rights and freedoms from our social activists. Very often, they will gain experience in explaining their concepts in plain language as they realize they have to show their colleagues their points. We learn about property rights and security from our lawyers and security experts. So we're trying to use all the strengths of every single person in the course. This has many advantages. It gives us local content, which is, of course, an important catchphrase right now. We are guaranteed to have the latest, most up-to-date local content because we are all bringing in every day what is happening in the world now, and we are getting all the expert views on what is happening, why it's happening, and what, if anything, should we be doing about it. I find that this is extremely helpful. Because, for instance, I have done other online programs. I did online MBA work, and I never went to the university, and I had a very good relationship with my teacher. However, all of the relationships in that MBA were teacher-student. My teacher to me, my teacher to each student. It was 20 unilateral relationships. On the other hand, in Diplo, and I find this much more exciting, I learn much more, and it's much more productive to have 20 participants, 20 facilitators, 20 teachers, and learning of all of the experience and all the background and all the points of view of each one. So we're bringing all of these examples and solutions from theory into practice, from the computer and classroom into our daily lives, because it mixes, it becomes the same thing. Besides going from from participant and student, I got to be kind of a joke in my course when I was a student, because at any point I could bring in e-voting. I thought e-voting, and I still think e-voting, is a neglected issue. So anytime I had a chance, I brought it in and I threw it in, and they actually would tease me online. They'd say, "Well, Ginger, don't you have a comment about e-voting here?" Well, I am now starting to work and coordinating and working with a Swiss expert, Michel Chevalier, and we are starting an e-voting course within the IG program at Diplo. So I'm not only went from student to tutor, but now we are actually making changes and with the most up-to-date, that's one of the most energetic, dynamic, important issues. I mean, e-voting, of course, without the vote, we have no democracy. I better stay away from that. So as you can see, I am a strong advocate of education because I come from Venezuela. I see that we are not sufficiently involved in policy making and in connection. Carolina showed very vividly the connection problem. But just having connection is not enough. Connection does not, I heard someone say this yesterday, I'm going to repeat it. Connection is not access. Knowledge begets knowledge. It's a vicious circle. If we don't have knowledge, we can't get knowledge. If we don't get knowledge, So we need to teach, we need to learn to make the best use we can of the resources we have. We do that through education, and online education helps us, particularly in the developing countries where we have cost problems, we have travel problems, we have access problems. It's our time. A busy professional can do an online course, the asynchronous part, almost all of it's asynchronous. So at any time in between classes and your lunch break, you can jump in, do your course, you're not paying for travel time, you're not paying even parking, you're not paying transport, you're not taking away for even babysitting for your children because you can work from home. So we have the mix and diversity of the local level, and we have the advantage of the global level. I know at this IGF, we're working very hard to take things from the global to the regional and local level, but education is one area in particular where I think it's very important that we take advantage of the global perspective and learn from each other, use our interconnection to make a base, to get a solid. We build our global piece by piece like a puzzle, and we get into our global vision. So from this, we're getting the best of all worlds, hopefully. If we use it properly, we learn to use it properly, we take advantage to learn how to better our own lives, our own professions, and to insert ourselves into the international processes that otherwise we would not be able to join. Thank you.
So just to add up before I pass the floor to Nika. I'm one of these techie nerds, thank you for that. but okay, anyhow, you are the e-voting maniac, so it's okay. I wanted to say that it was interesting what you mentioned, that we had so many, and we always have so many people with different backgrounds. So you had techie nerds, you had legal experts, you had businessmen, you had people from business sector, people from government, diplomats, and so on, and they have all already built some kind of knowledge and are experts in their fields. But they didn't tackle with internet that much, and they don't know the component of the others. Now, when they mix up together, they share their perspectives and their experience in their fields, and it really becomes a building, like building under construction that you've seen at the beginning of the knowledge. And the good thing is that even though all of them are employed, and all of them are full-time employed, they have a lot of tasks to do during the day. The fact also that they can do this one from home is quite good. And I'm not sure about babysitting, if it's, yeah. But I think Nika can tell much about that, because she has two lovely daughters, and I had several times I have problems with that, because she was working, of course, from home, and I was Skyping with her, and I was not sure if I was Skyping with her or with her daughters. And it was really a confusion sometimes, because her daughters just sit down and type something, and they already know some English, so I'm quite confused, but... She's been a tutor for 3 years already, and led several groups. She was also your tutor, right? Or not? No. So many groups. But I think she can give a bit insight from this core tutor side.
Okay. First of all, good morning, everyone. Vlada just repeated a couple of times, Nika. This is the nickname that Diplo gave me since I joined Diplo. My name is Veronika Creetsu. I'm currently working and living in Chișinău, the capital city of the Republic of Moldova. Today I'm actually here to share both from my experience as an online tutor with Diplo, but most of all to share what resulted as a result of Diplo IG capacity building program, what initiative has been implemented at the regional level. I will speak about that a little bit later. From my tutor experience, well, first of all, maybe I shall go back a little bit how I joined Diplo. I received an email back in 2002 about Diplo's postgraduate program in diplomacy and IT. I applied, but I was not accepted. Because they said Moldova is not one of the eligible countries. I applied back in 2003. I applied back in 2004. And in 2004, it happened. I joined Diplo's postgraduate program in diplomacy. Right after I graduated from the program, I joined IG capacity building program as one of the tutors. There were three of us, so I consider myself a kind of a veteran of the IG capacity building program. It was a challenge because none of us, none of my colleagues, neither Lupcho and Andrei and myself, we have never had any similar experiences in online facilitation. It was the first time we jumped into a similar experience. But I was lucky because I had experience in offline training. So I'm very much fond of facilitating and providing trainings and capacity building programs, only in then it's a different environment. It's in a face-to-face context. So what I was very, very interested in, I was interested to see how things that I used offline can work well online. And there were many risks, because you don't see the people, because you don't hear them, because you don't know really who is behind the scene, actually. But what I can say is that it has been a great experience. I've learned a lot, and I have even started writing a guidebook on online teaching techniques and methodologies, good practices and lessons learned, and I hope that by the end of 2008, the guidebook will be on Diplo's website and everyone will be able to access it and to further use the techniques that worked out well during the 3 years. I'm saying that I tested several techniques for 3 years, and there are definitely hundreds of good practices that other people can use. I hope that my other tutor colleagues will come to complete the guidebook with their experiences. So we are just at the very beginning. But that just the final word, it has been a great experience, and congratulations to Diplo for that. Thank you.
I just wanted to mention one important thing that we introduced last year. It is that we try to, because we have participants from all over the world, as you will see later on. Not necessarily now. I can switch on later. But the point is that we had so many people from Africa, from Asia, from Latin America, and it is a problem. It can be a problem if they have to speak in English. Not because they don't know English, not because no one of us is perfect in English, but simply if you want to try to express yourself, then it can be a problem. Now, in the first years, we had mixed groups. Later on, we realize that because of the local content and regional issues that are of importance, for instance, for Africa, and different one from Latin America. I guess you could have seen even in IGF, and we have really realized that throughout these 3 years. For instance, Latin America is very much interested in human rights, in freedom of expression, in network neutrality. African groups were mostly interested in infrastructure. Asia, like India, Pakistan, China, they were interested in business. So there are very many different interests of different regions, and we tried to tackle that in the last year by introducing an experimental group, which was a bilingual group, Spanish-English. So what we thought is like, okay, they have to speak English in order to be able to communicate throughout different groups so that they can also share experiences with Africa with Asia and Asia with Latin America and so on. But we wanted to try to make them feel more comfortable in expressing themselves. And that's why we introduced the bilingual group of Spanish-English, which was in Latin America. And here is the boss who did most of the coordination of that work. It was quite tough because you had to have then the tutor also who is bilingual, who can control, who already has the mission of Diplo in mind. And I think Ginger can pass several thoughts about it, and I think we can discuss a bit about it because there are very many issues that are not certain, whether it should be fully one language, it should be bilingual, it should so on. So, Ginger.
Okay, thank you. Yes, well, Nico was pointing out how difficult it is to start with online education because you don't know who's on the other side, you don't know how to deal with them, you can't pick up on their body language, you don't know, well, were they serious about that or was that supposed to be a joke? And this is compounded when most of your students are not speaking their native language. Our language really is part of our culture, it's part of who we are. Our body language accentuates that, so we've taken away our body language and we've taken away our way of expressing ourselves. Some languages, I mean, for me, my main languages are Spanish and English. In English, I say, oh, I dropped it. I broke the glass. In Spanish, I say, it broke itself. It fell. It's a different way of looking at it. It's how we think. It's how we work. And so language becomes very important. Even people who have access to language may not feel comfortable. And I, in particular, found that here I am. I'm a tutor from Venezuela. I'm doing in my Latin American region, there are no other Venezuelans. I tried to figure out why. They don't feel comfortable enough with their English. That exacerbates a problem that already exists, that the Hispanics are way underrepresented in the international policy processes. In WISIS, I was amazed. There were more Africans, more people from every part of the world except Latin America. The Spanish language, the Hispanics, are very underrepresented. And this not only means we're not seeing the global perspective, it means we're not bringing these things back for our policy-making decisions within our own countries, and we are not having input on the international level. So now you've seen I'm an advocate for online education and for multilingual education as well as e-voting. In this way, as Vlada said, we worked very hard. How do we decide to do it all in Spanish? Are we then isolating ourselves? So we came up with, we are using the English platform, but we are doing the foundation course, discussions and assignments in optional language. So many times, I don't know how to.
You want to show it?
If we can see.
Yeah, I think we should. You can keep talking and I'll try to do that.
Okay. Let me. We build in Spanish over the English text. This actually simulates. No, don't close it. Just. Yeah. I need to see.
I'm going to try to make it double here.
In Venezuela, at least, and I suspect in very many countries in the world, in the universities, the students have their discussions, their exams, and their assignments in their native language, but their texts, if they're studying math or engineering, may be in German, they may be in Japanese. They may be in English. In Venezuela, very often the classes are conducted in Spanish. Assignments and exams are in Spanish, but the textbooks are very often in English. So this online experience actually simulates what they're seeing in the universities. They're having very much of their course material in English. They can read it, they can assimilate it, they can study and research, but they're not comfortable perhaps expressing themselves. So we're giving the foundation course with the option of all discussions, all assignments and exam to be presented in Spanish, although they are need to be aware of English because they do, like it or not, probably have to use English to incorporate themselves into.
You can show it now.
Okay. This is, for instance, one of the texts that we had in the evolution of the internet governance. If I just open, if you see in yellow and in blue, highlighted areas are phrases that someone chose and wanted to comment on. And here, rather than looking at just one, I'm going to show you the discussion tree here. So you have the English text on the bottom, but if you see the discussions, as we go back and forth, answer each other, talk, am I going too fast? I'm not asking you to read it, I'm just asking you to notice that we have an English platform, an English text, and our discussion, this is the first text, and it was almost all in Spanish, so the discussions were very much in Spanish over the English text. Later on, this is the transcript of a chat session. We have a synchronous once a week, 1 hour chat session, which we hope most students will be able to attend. I don't know if you can. We actually got into a bit of German, French, Spanish, but the point I wanted to make here is that we started mixing language. We started everything's in Spanglish and English in the language. What did I say?
Spanglish.
What did I say? Oh, yeah, Spanglish. Oh, Spanglish, Portuñol. We really got to a point where we were taking advantage of all of the language, and this, I think, gave the students the familiarity and the confidence in the basic course to then be able to incorporate themselves into the discussion. Oh, I'm not finding the. Well, I was going to show you the forum. The forum, we had several discussions that postings go back and forth in language, but then from here, from this foundation course, we were able to incorporate into the mixed groups on the research and optional topics, and they already had the confidence then within the theme to deal perfectly. I think everyone incorporated perfectly into the English. Language was not an issue, and so we were able to effectively use, I think, both the English and the Spanish. So personally, rather than going into one language Spanish course, I really liked the way we used bilingual. We used the concepts. We were able to learn the jargon in English to be prepared to go into a meeting in English, but we were able to get more intimate, more confidential, confidence-building discussions in Spanish. Does anyone have a similar experience, or would they like to share? Did you do it all in one foreign language, all in one native language, or all in English, or mixed? Do we have any other comparisons we could make on that?
Or are we the pioneers in this? I don't think so, but it's, okay.
Yeah, the other online courses I've taken and given have either been all in Spanish or all in English. This is the first time and that was a little scary, but it really...
Yeah, I was even more because I don't understand Spanish, but...
And he's the coordinator.
But for instance, there was the basic thing that we start usually the foundation course with is like discussing what internet governance is. Now, when you say it in English, it's one thing. But when you say it in Spanish, it's completely another thing. In Serbian, where I come from, we don't really have the word governance in that sense. And I'm sure that many of you also face that problem. So this was one of the things that we could address easily if we have bilingual course. So you can simply try to find the correct wording, the correct understanding of some phrase. How did you find that? I mean, you were coping also with the bilingual a bit.
Well, Carolina was not only, her native language is Portuguese. We also had people whose native languages were French, people from Haiti, but they felt more comfortable in the bilingual group, so we have...
It's what I was saying earlier. You are really always building concepts and trying to find the appropriate word to use in that context, and the word that really makes sense for you and for your language and for the really meaning that the concept has in your society. So.
Yeah, I would like to thank you for your presentations. My question is about the bilingual groups. Do you have a French-English group, or is it only Spanish and English?
This year we had, because it was the experimental phase, we had only Spanish, because we had a huge number of people, our associates, that were very good in Spanish. So this was the experiment, but it worked. For next year, and I'm going to jump over that later on, what are our plans for next year, is to try to make something like that in Africa in French. We also wanted to do that in Arabic for the Middle East, but I don't know if we are going to handle that soon, because it's also a technical issue because of the script. But French is very possible, Spanish, maybe Portuguese. Now we have... I can show you the IG booklet, that this is an old edition, I mean, a common edition of Diplo about internet governance, but now we made it in Portuguese also. You can take it on the APC or Diplo stand. So we are trying to make different, to introduce different languages, and we are more than ready to cooperate with you or with any other partner to build this up.
The booklet is available in French. I don't know if we have any left at the stand because our materials are still in the customs, but it is available in French, and on our website there are materials available in French, including the complete text. But yes, we're hoping to get the French.
Hi, my name is Marília. I'm from Brazil, from the Federal University of Santa Maria, and I also took part on the 2007 capacity building program. I wanted to bring to the discussion two Brazilian methodological references very strong here to dialogue with your presentation. One I'm sure that you already know is Paulo Freire. And I bring this reference because there are two references with that people that work in the ground, on the field, and in developing countries. So they are very used to the difficulties and the problems that you may find. And Paulo Freire, he has a lot of books, but I'll only bring two of his ideas. One is that on the process, he worked with, he teaches people how to read and write, so he worked with illiterate people. And one of the propositions was, when you want to teach people how to read and write, you cannot bring another world on the text. You know, you have to bring the reality of the person to get this person involved in the process by her own experience, by text that means something to her. And I think that Diplo has this strong point, that tutors always encourage us to bring our own realities, to bring examples of what we see in our own countries. And the whole IG issue becomes more, it's more like we see how it works because we bring our own experiences. And I think that with the multilingual course, it will be even better because we have a huge difficulty. There are a lot of words in IG that you cannot translate. Like in Portuguese, it's hard. How can I explain to someone what is a backbone, for instance? It's difficult for someone who doesn't have the knowledge. So I think that the multilingual course will be us able to give translations in our own languages and begin to be multipliers, because it's difficult to be a multiplier if you cannot talk to your own people. You have to explain these terms in English. And the other thing that Paulo Freire brings is that there is no separation between teachers and students. You are always a teacher and a student at the same time. which leads me to my second reference that you may not already know. We have a movement here that is people who don't have lands. They're called like the landless movement. And they are a very strong movement here in Brazil, and they're very controversial because they invade lands that they don't think they are productive, and they start to product, to plant, to raise food there. But I'm not going to discuss the controversial side. I just wanted to talk about their methodology, because some of the people, they don't know they have a methodology to teach their children on their settlements. And I had a chance to go to one of these settlements and see how they work. So the children, they don't learn with teachers and then go to regular schools. And they get some knowledge, and they are responsible to pass this knowledge to the other children. So they have to be divided in small groups, and these children that learn something, he or she has to find a way to pass this knowledge on to her own colleagues. So since first age, they don't work with pedagogy, they work with andragogy, that is the education for adults, since the first age, and this is very positive. So I wanted to make a link with something that you said about the regional groups, which I think is a good thing to divide at first in regional groups. But I think that we miss something there. We miss some experiences from other regions that we have only a small time to get in touch with them. Because you didn't mention, but we have a good phase, that the optional topic. We can like choose one topic that is interest to us, and then we can get deep on that topic. And on that moment, we can mix with people from other regions, but it's only 2 weeks. And the task that is sent to us is really to comment like a paragraph and write a short paragraph. And I think it would be like much more interesting if in this moment of the optional topics, when we all get together with people from another regions, that we could bring something new, you know, a topic that interests to us, and we want to teach this or discuss this and be like multipliers and bring our reality and our region to this phase of the capacity building program. I think it would be wonderful and complete this other side. I know that when we discuss the text, we are teachers and students and we all mix up, but it would be good to have a moment with people from another region too. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, this is exactly the challenge, what you mentioned about regional component that we had. Like if you enable people to speak in their own language, then they're and not in English as well, then you cannot provide this component of mixing different regions. And it appeared obviously that it's very important that the regions also are in touch, even though they're discussing some of their local problems mostly, but they all have some similar experiences to share it.
Vlada?
Sorry, but I agree 100%, because I, as I mentioned, I think that even though we're moving from a global to a regional and local level on almost all IG issues, education is the exception where we need to go to the global level to learn from each other. We do this in part, if you remember, although maybe we should do it more in the more basic phase, but in the research phase, we do propose our own topics and work with people from all of the other regions. So maybe what we need to do is give more opportunity to choose the topics and the groups, or I don't know, we'll have to work on that. Thank you.
If I may comment.
Sure.
Okay, because as I said, I was one of the tutors since 2005, and in 2005 we actually had mixed groups. We had three groups in which people were coming from different regions. That was a great challenge for us because of the time zone difference, because we really wanted to have very productive online sessions, and in case you have people coming from different regions, not everyone is able to attend because there is always the issue of time. What is the best time for everyone to come for, let's say, online meeting? In 2006 and 2007, we kind of built regional groups, which from my perspective, from my tutor perspective, was more constructive, was more well-organized, was more efficient, because everyone was involved. Because, for example, I coordinated Europe team, everyone was there because there was only 1 hour difference between my country and Serbia, for example. But still, everyone was on board, and we didn't miss anyone. In 2005, the challenge was that not everyone could participate that effectively. That's why, as Vlada and Ginger mentioned, we introduced this inter or cross-regional approach in the research phase, which, again, my personal opinion is that it worked out really well. So there are both pros and cons, but when you are at the other side of the story, like the tutor position, you see several challenges that are quite difficult to be addressed in case we deal with cross-regional approach for the first phase. I see many hands here, but try to be as concise as you can, short, maximum 1 minute, okay?
I am Katitza Rodriguez. I am from Peru. I actually also a student in 2007. My comment is one. I really like the focus about regional topics, regional meetings, and actually also about mixing people from different countries. Why? What happened during the World Summit of Information Society, during the first summit and the second summit? Before the summit, no one used to work with other groups of NGOs or academics from other areas. So when we start the summit, each person start talking about different themes that you are not expert, and you didn't understand each other. There were no communications. There are many difficulties to work in the caucus, in Latin America caucus, because someone's brought the information and communication technology. Some works on a campaign for communication, the right of communication. Some come from the cyber rights. So each other define their each topic with their own names, and we're talking about the same, but we don't understand each other. So, and we speak the same language, and we're in the same region. So what happened? So the good thing in the course was that each other, we're talking people who work in ICT for development, people who are working on cyber rights, people who were working on security and technical stuff, geek persons. So we start understanding each other what we really want to mean, and we'll be able to get consensus or not. And that's a challenge in this process, and we see that in the course, in a small space. That's all.
Okay, thank you, Katitza.
Just a quick. Yes. So you and sorry, we are thinking about diplomacy here. We are having a forum that is discussing what are the country interests in the Internet Governance Forum. So if you have a regional group that is building the concepts for Latin America and from the civil society of Latin America, these people will gonna be challenging and defending their own concept of internet governance in the global forum. So we are not just talking about knowledge. We are talking to what public interest and internet as a public good means for me, Brazilian, Latin American. And I think this regional perspective in the first phase that we have this bilingual, we have the European group, we have the Asian group, we have the African group, really help to build regional identity for common needs and common problems. And when the second phase, we have the research phase with people from all over the world, is another challenge to build again this global. But then when I went to the research phase with people from Asia, I was defending to my point of view as a Latin American person. So I think this is very important to show that we are talking about politics, even during education. So it's just to address this regional.
Okay, I promise I'll be very quick. But I do, Katitza was also in the the bilingual group, and we're tending to say Latin American group because it's regional groups. I would like to point out that this was a Hispanic group, which is very different from a Latin American necessarily. If you just look at the map, we had people from Argentina all the way to Venezuela, so that's quite a large area to cover to start with Brazil, with Mexico. So we went with almost the complete North and South American continents. We had people in Africa. We had people in New Zealand. So it was a Hispanic group, not a Latin American group. We were a whole world group united by the language. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Sharon Ahmad from South Africa. Two quick questions. The first one directed to the panel in general. It was mentioned a little bit earlier that Diplo's mission was to promote democratic institutions in developing nations. But regarding your work in IG, I think it's very relevant to developed nations as well. And what is the long-term strategy of Diplo Foundation in terms of actually entering developed markets and working in capacity building there and getting them to then cooperate in the spirit of multi-stakeholderism with your fellows and alumni from developing nations in which you're very, very strong? So that's the first question. The second question I'll direct to the self-confessed techie geek. And that is that I am here in representing the youth caucus for the IGF, and we're obviously a bunch of early adopters, and while I think the Diplo platform, which I've used, is fantastic, I'm getting fairly bored of Web 2.0. So where is the technology moving? I'm aware that Diplo has some sort of presence in Second Life. Can you elaborate on that? What kind of advanced tools are going to take Diplo forward over the next 5 years? You mentioned the word pioneer. Well, what's on its way, and what kind of tools are coming to help educate people online? Thanks.
As if every good diplomat, I would say thank you for the questions. but really, questions are really good. The first one is very important one. If you see the map, which you cannot see fully now, but you can see what is important is that U.S. is missing, is that Europe, except for Southeastern Europe, is missing. And to be honest, I cannot really answer why is that so, because the core was, even though we were focused to, and we are always focused to developing world in a way, but the core is always open to anyone. But we never received really so many applications from the developed countries. It can be, A, that people are not interested, but I doubt, and B, that probably we didn't reach that part somehow. Maybe because of our previous experiences and courses, our previous communities are based in developing countries, and it was probably not that the outreach was a bit shorter to developed countries. But definitely there is an intention and a wish to include people from developed countries as well. Even though we had several people that are, if not originally, for instance, from UK and US, but they were living for many years there. So you can say they're living in a developed country. And the experience with these few people that were on our courses were excellent, because they brought completely different dimension of something that is already working in some developed country, comparing to something that is being developed in the third world. So this is a precious component, and we are definitely searching for partners that can help us extend this outreach. I hope this at least partly answers your question. The second one, regarding the technology, the platform you've seen, and it enables much of interaction between people. And we did, in fact, try to make some experiments within Second Life. This platform that we use is based on the textual, it's textual based, because most of our people are coming from regions where the connection is not that good. They can use this platform with a modem connection. They couldn't use Second Life or voice or anything without. Though in some recent courses within the postgraduate programs, we introduce some video clips which are not you can complete the course without them, but they can be helpful. So we are trying to find some balance within this. And to be honest, we wanted to make a Second Life extension of this panel today, but it went bad because of the technical issues. And we might try for the second panel, which is tomorrow morning, to try to extend it to Second Life if we succeed to bring a second beamer and laptops and organize everything, because we did organize several sessions in Second Life. Now, Second Life is a tool which may be broken tomorrow. So we are trying to focus on concepts rather than on tools. And maybe some other platform virtual reality will emerge and we'll try to follow it. At this point, it is Second Life, and there is a diplomacy island on Second Life. I invite you to visit. If you're Second Life addicted, then definitely visit it. You'll find many interesting things, and there is also a working embassy of Maldives effectively working over there. Now, we will try to integrate that as well. Within the research, for instance, we have moved to wikis in the recent phase. So we abandoned our own platform in a bit, moving to public platforms that are becoming a common knowledge, common education of people working online. So they use Wiki, they use blogs, they use these Flickrs and the other... What was the platform that you mentioned the day before? Not the blog, but Twitter, right? Okay, so some emerging platforms, emerging features to somehow incorporate them into the course. So that is the plan, and again, this is the field also we are most welcoming the yeah, okay, Second Life is here. I don't know if the bandwidth would be enough, but definitely you can come and visit, and we're going to try to do that in maybe tomorrow. Robert, let's try to be quick because we are...
We have a microphone.
It's Dan, and we can extend some 15 minutes on that.
I just wanted to make a couple of comments. I think it's really interesting, the question about tools and comments, and then some of the limitations that you mentioned, because I think what's really driving some of the things that you're doing is because you have a developing country focus, a lot of the tools and a lot of these new ways of collaboration are really coming from developed countries. And so in a way, you haven't gone that path because it's limiting to developing countries. So I think, you know, as part of going forward, perhaps in collaboration and maybe seeking support both from institutions and funding to make it possible, because none of this is free, is, you know, updating the platform so it complies, I would say, not only with the emerging, this is Second Life, some people are referring it to Web 3.0, but also, you know, you have your books in different languages, but also having your platform so it you can read it left, you know, right to left, and it can handle Arabic and things like that. Because I think going forward, recognizing that if you want to do this for developing countries, most developing countries, though they may know English, if you want to have bilingual platforms, they'll have to handle Arabic. They'll have to handle the variety of languages that you find in Asia and in Southeast Asia. You know, that's a big... thing to put on the back end. And so as much as, you know, that's possible, I think, you know, starting with an English is a common base, but, you know, moving forward, I think you really need developers, you really need, you know, a great deal of support. Having participated in the WSIS process, and I'll finish with this, I think it's, what's interesting is it's one of the few initiatives that really bring forward the different stakeholders through an education process. And I've seen over the last couple of years that I followed Diplo is that you have people that start up students and they just consider themselves colleagues. And 2-3 years down, there's still a very good rapport amongst everyone, but someone is now working at the Foreign Service and they're actually the diplomat that's negotiating. And they will then start collaborating with the colleagues that are civil society colleagues. So you're actually building trust. And I think building trust in international processes is a big challenge. A lot of times you find the posturing. And so to break down the barriers using education, I think is one of the things that you don't emphasize as much as you should. And, you know, you should emphasize that, particularly with developing countries that sometimes have very strong positions. And having them being able to dialogue with others and building respect with civil society and the business sector, I think is pretty well unique. And, you know, it's good to see, and I hope that, you know, going forward that, you know, that if I'm not mistaken, you receive most of your funding just from one sponsoring or funder. And, you know, a lot of funders, sometimes they only fund for so many cycles. So I hope that, you know, you find creative ways of generating income, but also, you know, diversifying your funding pool. So I hope that that's possible. I hope the next couple of days that might be possible.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. This is really an important thing that you mentioned, and also, I mean, referring to the map that you've seen, this is probably one of the most precious things that we achieved, is the community of people from all over the world that are effectively linked. And every time when I come to the IGF or any of these process meetings, I'm surprised to see again some of our ex-students which did not come with Diplo, but are simply, as you said, by some other government or other delegation. And this is a huge network. So we have friends that can help, but you're absolutely right. We need also the partners, strategic partners in the program.
Okay, my name is José Murilo. I'm from the Ministry of Culture in Brazil. I'd like to make two suggestions. First is, we have numbers here in Brazil, numbers of access to the internet that are very interesting. For example, the official one says about 30% that of the people have access to the internet. But other not so official numbers says that through the what we call here LAN houses, we have like 50% of access to the internet. So we have a huge crowd that could be accessed through some kind of new interfaces that could be like offering some interesting things for these kids, especially that are working, that are accessing through the LAN houses in the peripheries of big cities in Brazil, especially. So I think this could be a good thing for Diplo to explore. And the other thing is that the Ministry of Culture has set up a chat interface to be used here at the IGF. You have an interface where you have the streaming of video streaming of the main sessions, and the people can participate by through the chat, and this chat can even be projected in a screen into the room. So maybe it could be something that your students from internet governance could be using right now. I don't know if you have a list, you could just throw the link there and maybe you could have a good participation.
Thank you.
Just a brief comment about that. I've been to, before I was working for the Center for Technology and Society in Fundação Getúlio Vargas, and we've been to a lot of meetings about the cultural points that were developed by the Ministry of Culture in Brazil. And I can say they have a really advanced, it's a really advanced project because they really implement, apply that structure of learning in the pyramid I was talking about, because they have the environment. So the children, despite of having access to the internet, access to the content, they have theater classes, they have musical classes. So you are really putting together a lot of things that create an environment that put people in a comfort position. And I think the online version that can reflect something of that methodology is this kind of online course and other open educational resources promoted by UNESCO and other universities from all over the world that really create this interactive and this bringing from down to top.
Thank you. This is really a valuable input. You have different types of people that you should address different way. And also to try to find a nice way to include them. I wanted to briefly go through what effectively we need, or anyone who would make such a program needs. What are the resources, and what are probably the things that the partners can provide? So you have intellectual resources, like expertise in different fields to help address local content, bring hot issues. You have financial resources, as always, for the organization. Fellowship resources, this is something that is very important. As I said, the third phase of the program is trying to put these new leaders that build some skills into the real process by offering some scholarship, some positions that they can effectively practice and implement it. Last, as it concerns our program, it is the core funding of the platform and the whole program, which was thus far done by Diplo as an in-kind contribution. But for the partners, okay. So what Diplo already has is the methodology, which is quite working, and even though we're going to improve it and we always look for new suggestions, the platform, which is quite functional, and we are extending it, as we said, with new tools. Trained tutors, as most of them, has gone through the process And I've been also trained. There was a training for tutors, and next year as well with the certificate, so that tutors are going to be like a certificated tutors in this process. We have basic materials, as you've seen the booklets, but this is a base. And we have the great community which can assist with the promotion, with finding new people, with probably helping with also translation and other things. But then what we need is to extend this courseware into the new issues, the emerging issues, to translate it, to update with regional content, to find some experts that can bring expertise into this education. Funding for the whole program, for the experts, for the tutors. Targeted participants is something that we thought is very important, to reach the institutions that might need educated and skilled field workers, which means not only, okay, post an open call, but find the institutions that can say, hey, I need such kind of educated people. I want to send someone over there to go through the course. This is also very important. Promotion of such an activity, as I've said some panel earlier, there was a research on what is the reason for people not using the internet, why they're not using it. And it was almost 50% of them, they said they don't know what they need it for. They don't know how to use it. Now, this is something a bit different. This is awareness building. But for that, you need to have people that are field workers and understand the issue. And these are the people that should go through the capacity building program. And finally, fellowship positions, once again, which is very, very important. Thus far, we had many partners in different fields. So different partners assisted with different aspects, like with expertise, with fellowships, and so on. And we are searching for more. So if anyone of you is willing to discuss it, please approach us afterwards. We're more than willing to make regional partnerships or whatever you might have as a suggestion. And very briefly, before we switch to final phase, is like, what is the future? And we mentioned it already. In the next year, Diplo is going to do the same program with firstly set of regional courses as much as possible in local language or bilingual course, definitely, with regional components. This is intended to bring as many people on the basic level, so they know what it is about, and that some of them that are already expert in legal, IT, or whatever, business, they say, hey, come on, this is interesting issue. We should get involved into that. The advanced courses, like tackling hot issues like intellectual property rights, which we dealt very much thus far, freedom of expression, e-governance, e-voting, e-business, infrastructure, and so on. So to try to focus people and give them some expertise, for which we also need experts' involvement. And finally, the research project, which is like a continuance and some output on their own of the participants, and fellowship positions so that they can experiment with it, that they can implement it. Now, of course, we are also ready to discuss short courses in any area that some organization and anyone might need, like the expertise short course, 1 month for our people in this area, and so on. At the end, I would like to invite Veronica. There was an excellent follow-up of our project, which was done in Moldova by Veronica's organization, and very briefly to go through this to show how it can go further, how we can make a follow-up on a local level.
Thank you, Vlada. So this is actually the answer to one of the questions raised earlier. Back in 2005, when I first involved in IG capacity building program, at the end of the year, I thought that would be great to have a regional program or a national program. And in this case, I thought about my country, because there are so few people involved in IG discussions in Moldova, even today. So in 2005, I started looking for started doing fundraising and promoting the idea of capacity building program to different donor institutions in Moldova. The reply that I received all the time, I think I applied with the proposal 11 or 12 times to different institutions. They said, it's too early for Moldova. It's not the right time to discuss IG-related issues in Moldova. It's not the right moment. So we started looking into other possibilities. And the CMB Training Center, the NGO that I currently run in Moldova, is a member of the Global Knowledge Partnership, which is a partnership based in, organization based in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. So this was the institution that supported our initiative. And what we actually did, we applied DIPLO's methodology, DIPLO's approach to IG capacity building to Moldova context. So what we did, we selected 16 young leaders, because the project as such is called Youth Leaders for Community Development Through Internet Governance. Before walking out of this room, I'm kindly asking you to take this flyer with you and learn more about this initiative. So I call it DIPLO's baby in Moldova, actually, because the approach was the same. Only, as Vlada said at the very beginning, DIPLO omitted the face-to-face part. We, in Moldova, we actually applied a face-to-face program. So we had 16 young leaders who have been selected for getting involved in this program. They were selected based on a multi-stakeholder, multidisciplinary approach. So it is very important to know that we tried to include, to involve young, active people from Ministry of Information Development, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, International Labour Organization, young people who started businesses, ICP providers. We had civil society representatives who are interested in IG-related issues in Moldova. So they participated in a 3 days very intensive training program, which was organized back in May. Vlada was one of our experts in the program. As a result of the training program, these 16 young people who have their full-time jobs in Moldova, they were involved in a research phase. So what they did, they actually split into four teams, and they looked into what is the current status of Moldova IT infrastructure at this moment, what are the users' habits, what do Moldovan users use the internet for, what is the current situation in regards to e-commerce? Do we have e-commerce in Moldova? Do we have e-money, e-banking, e-payments? What is the current status of that? And we also looked at them promoting multilingualism and cultural diversity on the internet. In Moldova, we have several minority groups, ethnic groups, and we wanted to look at to what extent these minority groups are represented in the internet, or do they use the internet at all? And as DIPLO has the fellowship program, we also included the fellowship approach, and two of our participants are actually joining us in the GK3 meeting in Kuala Lumpur in a couple of weeks from now on, so that we provide the opportunity for the most active ones to share the experiences of being involved in a similar initiative in Moldova. Unfortunately, and I say unfortunately, we have conducted the program in English, because we didn't have the materials in Romanian. But the good part is that one of the participants in the program, who is a CCTLD operator representative, as a result of the program, she came with a proposal. Let the CCTLD operator, the one who deals with .md in Moldova, let us contribute to the translation of the IG booklet. So today we have the IG DIPLO IG booklet in Romanian language. We have three partner organizations in the project who are from Romania, and these are the organizations who are going to help us with the editing of the Romanian version of the IG booklet. So today we have the booklet, we have 16 young people trained, we have people who are going to participate in international meetings, but the most important things, and I will be very short on this, are the results of the research. What did we manage to find out as a result of the research, or what are the priorities that have been identified for Moldova in the I don't know, months to come? Those participants highlighted the need to integrate self-evaluation skills into ICT IG capacity building programs. If any of you is interested in that, you can approach me later on. Also, they highlighted the need to establish an internet governance forum in Moldova, so the different stakeholders, government, civil society, business community, international organizations, would be actively involved in IG-related issues and IG processes. And the approach would be the same, like we used with the youth, multi-stakeholder, multidisciplinary approach, doing capacity building for this IG forum, involving them in the research, and again, the approach is based on multi-stakeholderism. The other highlight was made on what does Moldova do with the internet? Is it internet for business or internet as a business? What is the current status of that? And these young people are interested in researching this further on. Again, one of the latest ideas is to promote IDNs. Moldovan community and Romanian speaking community is interested in implementing IDNs and developing local content in Romanian language. So this is one of the priorities for this core group to develop further and implement further in Moldova in the time to come. And the last two priorities that have been identified is the need for training for children and for parents on the use of the internet. Because today in Moldova we face the problem of children accessing internet and using internet cafes for completely different purposes rather than education and searching for appropriate materials and information. They rather play games, and this is not controlled by anyone. No one takes care of that. So Tim came to the conclusion that there is a need for training both for children and parents. And the last one is promoting and encouraging local rural entrepreneurship to use the ICT. So it's very important to have local models, and it's very important to bring to people the reason for using the internet at the rural community level. They need to become aware of why would they need that. And in line with this encouraging rural entrepreneurship, I think that many of you have seen the book, The Power of Ideas, Internet Governance. There is an article that I have submitted for this book. It's here, and it's called Supporting Young Social ICT-Based Entrepreneurship in the Rural Areas of Moldova. So my conclusion is that Diplo's approach, Diplo's online approach was excellent, and it gave us so many ideas for trying to replicate it at the regional level. And the more initiatives of this kind we are going to have, the better will be for the local communities. And one last word is about the fact that at the end of the project, we are going to have a methodological guidebook, which will be disseminated for free. It will be available in April 2008. And any institution willing to implement a similar idea, a similar project initiative in their own countries, they can use this guidebook for free because that's the purpose of the project, to implement the idea, the IG capacity building program, in the way that it impacts the community and that people start becoming more aware of the issues as such. Okay.
No, I wanted you to please tell where and how people can access that.
Okay. Yes, that's a very good question. Can we? As I said in the flyer that there is right near the door, there is the link to there is the website given there, but if you access www.cmb.md/IGF, this is the dedicated site for the current program. And actually this is something new for Moldova and for the region because it's the first initiative of this kind. And, we have all the information there. The people are, they also have the possibility to read news on IG or IG-related issues related to ICANN, to other initiatives of this kind. So feel free to visit cmb.md/IGF and learn more about this initiative. Thank you. Any questions? But I think we don't have time for that. Thank you very much for your attention, for your patience, and
have
a good day.
You have the website and the email if you need anything. We have a stall in Village Square. Please visit us. And I'm glad that you did not sleep during the session. That means that we could be talking for hours more, but if you're willing to join us, just join us at the stand. Thank you again. And tomorrow there is a session on security tomorrow morning organized by Diplo. I sincerely invite you to come. It's going to be really good about best practices and problems in security. Thank you for coming.
Imate li neku u Makedoniji ko je počeo da radi, da neko nema, ja sam iz